Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
We're rolling and it's a podcast. And this week, the part of Mr. Mark Henry Ellen, who is indisposed, will be taken by Mr. Alexander Carl Gold.
Hello there.
How are you doing, Alexander? Are you up to the challenge?
I'm not sure, but time will tell. There is only one way to find out.
Right. So we're going to start with a Stat Waddy game, as ever. Shall I go first?
You go first. Go on.
Okay, this is a very simple idea. Okay, these are names. Are they the names of bands or are they the names of cocktails? Okay, bands or cocktails? Are you ready for the first one?
Okay. Yep.
Judas Jump. Ooh. Judas Jump. Is that a band or a cocktail?
I'm just trying to imagine how it could possibly taste. I think Judas Jump, that's a cocktail.
Judas Jump was established in 1969 as a heavy progressive rock band. They used Mellotron, woodwind and brass in their sound and secured a recording contract with Parlophone. They were led by Andy Bowne, former member of The Herd.
Oh, wow, okay.
And later member of Status Quo and all kinds of people.
It definitely should be a cocktail, though.
It ought to be a cocktail.
It would involve cranberry.
It would. Moving on. Hanky Panky. Hanky Panky.
That's a cocktail. That's got to be a cocktail.
It is a simple combination of Fernet Branca, gin and vermouth.
Oh, Fernet Branca.
Blood and Sand.
That's a cocktail.
Oh, you know. Okay. Gets his name from a 1922 bullfighter movie and points to its ingredients. The blood represents hearing cherry liqueur and the sand is for the orange juice. What about Toasted Heretic?
That's a band. That's got to be a band.
It's an Irish rock group who attracted a cult following in the late 80s and 1990s. They're from Galway. How about Horse Feather. Horse Feather. Is it a band or is it a cocktail?
I just can't feel it on my palate. I would say that's a band.
Now, it's a careful and delicious blend of rye or bourbon, ginger beer, and a dash or two of bitters, poured over ice in a highball glass and garnished with a wedge of lime. Mint Royale. Is that a band or is that a cocktail?
That's a cocktail.
Now, it's the alias of electronic music producer Neil Claxton, and until 2004, a duo consisting of himself and Chris Baker, originating from Manchester in England. How about the Bend Over Shirley?
The Bend Over Shirley. That's a very fruity cocktail, surely.
It's similar to a Shirley Temple, but all grown up. Mixed together raspberry vodka and cubed ice, then add Sprite, grenadine, and garnish with cherries. How about Juicy Lucy? Juicy Lucy.
Juicy Lucy. that's on the same menu as the Shirley cocktail, I think.
Now, it's a British blues rock band officially formed on 1st of October 1969, featuring Glenn Ross Campbell and Chris Mercer. Actually, it had a hit record.
Oh, really?
You see, I can do these on you where I can't do them on Mark because you're so young, whereas Mark will remember Juicy Lucy, whereas you don't necessarily. I can get away with that. What am I going to give you? One more. All right. Gin Gin Mule. Gin Gin Mule. Is that a band or a cocktail?
Is that a cocktail? It's a cousin of the Moscow Mule.
It is indeed. It's a Gin Gin Mule, a.k.a. the Ginger Rogers. It's a cross between a Moscow Mule and a mojito with gin as the star of the show. Ooh. And I'll leave you with one more. Strawberry Switchblade. Strawberry Switchblade, band or cocktail?
Strawberry Switchblade is that's a band name.
It is indeed, actually. I think indeed, I think they were actually on the cover of Smash Hits.
Strawberry. Oh, really?
they were from Scotland, and they were Jill Bryson and Rose McDowell, best known for the song Since Yesterday from 1985. And their flamboyant clothing with bows and polka dots, as featured on the cover of Smash Hits. Okay. Well, you did quite well. You did well there. You did very well. Okay, what have you got for me? Go on.
Well, I've got one for you. It's going back, reverting to the old formula. I'm going old school on this one. There are five things, and there is one ringer within that grouping. Okay. This is based on a suggestion by Keith Adsley.
All right, okay, we know him.
And it's I'm keeping it on brand and going for vegan band names.
What, you mean bands of vegans?
No, so they're vegan things, and
that are also band names. Okay.
Indeed.
Okay.
So the selection you've got, there's one ringer contained here. Is okay. Mung bean. The lentils. Mulberries.
Go on.
Soaked oats.
Soaked.
And tofu Stravinsky.
Run those past me one more time.
Okay. Mung beans.
I remember that. Mung bean. Yeah.
I love that word. The lentils.
Yeah.
Mulberries.
Yeah.
Soaked oats. And tofu Stravinsky.
I don't have a clue, so I'm going to take a wild stab that the lentils is made up.
No, the lentils are a Massachusetts three-piece risen out of the ashes of the Happy Jawbone family band signed to the Mighty Feeding Tube Records.
Oh, good God.
So can I have another guess?
No, mung bean then.
Mung bean are an adventurous quintet integrating the polish of pop with the grit of seasoned instrumentalists and performers from Columbus, Ohio. Soaked Oats are a New Zealand-based sludge pop band consisting of Oscar Mayne on the larynx and mamba, Henry Francis on the bubble stick, Max Holmes and the Blue Whale, and Connor Freely wielding the Gorilla Sticks.
Wow. Go on. Give me the other real one, then. Go on.
Tofu Stravinsky is a smooth, crunchy, jazzy and hip beat combo that sound like walking through a glowing cityscape, drinking good red wine from a Coke can, which is what I always ask for when I walk into HMV.
Absolutely. So what's the ringer, then?
Well, it's mulberries, which is just great with porridge.
Well done to you and Keith Adsley there. That's very good.
Thank you.
I mean, if people have got suggestions for these things, they can send them in.
So nervous about that. My God.
What's the address that people send them to?
The address is wiye.london@gmail.com.
Okay. In the continued indisposition of Mr. Mark Ellen, I wanted to carry on a thread that is a personal favourite of his, actually. We talked about it many times before on the podcast, which is that the greatest string of unbroken chart success and originality and creativity belongs to Ray Davies in the Kinks in the 1960s, where he just wrote, sang, and recorded hit after hit after hit for about a period of about 5 years, something like that, started in 1964. And we said, well, obviously, there's other people who did something similar, obviously the Beatles, but they shared the songwriting duties between two people, you know, so it's a slightly different thing, whereas Ray Davies had the pressure on him. And so, first of all, what I wanted to do was just, let's remind ourselves, shall we, if we can do this, by the miracle of my iPad on my lap here, of this kink string of hits that start in 1964.
You really got me, yeah? What a track that is. My God. You really got me, God.
Now, you might think they got into a bit of a rut by that point, but no, because the next one.
Tired of waiting for you?
Tired of waiting for you. And the next one is the one that people forget.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Everybody's Going to Be Happy. It's not one of the most memorable ones, but anyway, it was another hit. Next one. Set Me Free. Next one, interestingly enough, the same initial letters. See My Friends.
Ah, yes.
Next one's it feels like a little bit of a step back, but anyway.
Till the end of the day.
Till the end of the day. Now a little bit of a left turn here. Next one. They seek him here. They seek him there. Which is immediately followed by the one that absolutely everybody bought.
Of course.
That's Sunny Afternoon, of course. Then, followed by a bit of a similar opening. Also, interestingly, it struck me, I was going through this earlier, that's one of the rare cases where they use another instrument other than just the basic stuff of the band. Mm. So they weren't ringing the changes by bringing in, you know,
French horns and
or whatever, not until there. Then, obviously, this.
A staple in anyone's musical diet, it should be, surely that. Yeah,
absolutely.
What a brilliant, brilliant song.
Then this.
Autumn, I think, Almanac. I know that one.
Autumn Almanac.
Okay.
And I think the next one was the first one not to go top 10.
Ooh. It's cutting out a little bit.
Is it? Great song, Wonder Boy. Then there's this.
This is Days. Oh.
So, you know.
My God, he was good, wasn't he? Jeez. When you think about that, you just think, but you know, John and Paul were a little bit lazy. Do you know what I mean? Palming the dregs off, but
he had to do everything himself.
Yeah,
absolutely everything.
Astonishing.
Himself.
I think he's got one of the most underrated voices in rock and roll as well. Yeah. You know, he's not a great singer, but the way he expresses things is absolutely. If you sit and listen to a Kinks album, just listen to the way, like, his meter and the way he accents certain words, and you know, he's so expressive with it. He worked out how to use the limitation to his voice very early on. And I think that makes him really great.
So I always thought there's nobody quite compares with that, but there is. Oh, I've got a nomination for a potential comparison. And it only struck me the other day when I was writing something about this group. Similar group, actually. American rather than British, but similarly utterly dependent on one member, okay, who wrote everything, sang everything. And they started off with the first couple of hits were in the States, hits in 1967, which were cover versions. So we won't count them, okay? First two were other people's songs. So in 1968, the leader of this group, somebody said, why don't you ever go writing your own songs? So this is what he wrote.
I can't quite hear it. Creedence Clearwater Revival, John Fogerty.
John Fogerty, Proud Mary. Immediately followed by this.
Bad Moon Rising. Cover band staple, that.
Absolutely. Then there's this, Lodi. Then there's this, Green River. Then this, Commotion. Then there's this, Down on the Corner. Then there's this, as used recently controversially by Donald Trump,
ooh,
Fortunate Son. Traveling Band. Unbelievable voice. Who'll Stop the Rain. And just in case you think he's flagging at this point.
Astonishing. He's had a musical power bar and got his energy back.
Run Through the Jungle. It goes on. It goes on. So I don't know if you know, not all of those were huge hits in the UK. Most of them were. But the amazing thing about him is he only started in 1968 and he pretty much stopped in 1971, and maybe 1972, just about, because the rest of the band said, we want to write some songs as well.
can I have a go? John!
A little
fact on a tangent. I once played a house concert at John Fogerty's keyboard player's place in L.A.,
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. It's got a grand piano in the flat. It's astonishing.
He's probably done quite well out of it. And he was the guy out front. He was the guy who wrote everything. He was the guy who sang everything. And then his brother Tom played rhythm guitar. And it originally had been Tom's band. But the amazing thing is that John Fogerty had just had this absolutely extraordinary musical talent. And his brother, Tom, had hardly any. You would have thought a little bit of it would have gone over there, you know.
Did Tom have the looks? Was he good at cooking? I mean, there's got to be some kind of balance, isn't there?
Because also, that was the other thing about John Fogerty. He was really good looking as well.
Did Tom hate him?
Well, he was the first person to leave the group. And
I'll show you,
and he didn't. And I was just reading John Fogerty's autobiography the other day, and he told me that when they first started agitating to contribute songs, Tom sent him a tape of something he said, I've written something. Have a listen to this. And so John played the tape, and all it was Tom humming.
It's the bridge. Just that two times, then the chorus.
So then later on, it is astonishing when you think about it. I've hummed it. Here you are. Because don't forget, the thing that people don't realise who didn't live through the time, straight away after the Beatles kind of broke up and stopped putting out, stopped putting out records quite as frequently, Creedence Clearwater Revival were the biggest pop group in the world. You know, everything they did went flying up the American charts, flying up the UK charts and other charts, because everybody liked Creedence Clearwater Revival, because it was just a, you know, it was a terrific sound, you know, united the audience in a way that lots of things didn't. And so you would have thought, if you're going to finally say to your brother who's done all that, I've got something, you'd have thought you'd gone to the trouble of doing a proper demo, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Not just dubbing it. And so eventually when he let the other two, the bass player and the drummer, write their own songs, they put out an album which just stiffed. And I remember the review in Rolling Stone at the time said, in years to come, this record will be known as Fogerty's Revenge.
Yeah.
Now, I got boys, you want to write your own songs? Here you go. Up to the microphone you go. So, anyway. So, now, do you have a contender for, you know, in that tough competition between Ray Davies and John Fogerty? Is there anybody else?
I think I do, but I think I do. But with the Kinks, with Ray Davies, I mean, are we talking about his chart success on both sides of the Atlantic?
No, not necessarily. I mean,
okay.
Because let's not get bogged down in Guinness Book of Hit Singles trivia. No.
Okay. Fine. That's good. Well, I did a little tot up last night, and I discovered that that Oasis had 26 consecutive chart hits.
Right. Okay.
27 actually. There's one in the middle that's been written by Liam, but we don't have to count that. Probably shouldn't, in fact. But over what they split up in, was it 2009? So that's a 15-year career. Their lowest chart position was Supersonic, which is the first single. And I think the last one, Falling Down, I think got to number one. But every single one after Supersonic charted one or two, or
yeah.
Which is also quite a run. Noted that Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds have not enjoyed the same chart success. But there we go.
I tell you, the other ones I was thinking of, and I haven't done a calculation, Pet Shop Boys, probably not far off. I mean, although that's two people writing the songs, you know, or coming up with the ideas or whatever. Yeah. But you know, they had a pretty long streak. But anyway, if anybody knows any further contenders for that title, the Ray, we're going to call it the Ray Davies Crown, aren't we? At the moment,
yeah.
Because it's fairly unchallenged. But it's interesting to look at other people who were similarly creative, you know, and were the leader of the band in a short period of time during which they had just staggering success. Send us in your nominations, please do. What's that email address again, Alex?
It is wiye.london@gmail.com.
The Word Podcast, prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So we do love a good story about a rock statue here on the Word Podcast.
Oh, nothing better.
Rarely a week goes by nowadays without somebody proposing to do something in the masonry line to memorialize some figure from popular music. And, you know, we're all connoisseurs of such gems of the art form as the statue of Phil Lynott in Dublin's Grafton Street, and the many statues of the Beatles that are scattered all over Liverpool, none of them managing to solve the essential problem of memorialising a rock star in stone, which is the trousers, because they can never get the trousers right. But anyway, this is a case of a female. And I don't know if people have followed this, that in Tennessee, the subject of statues of heroes of the South who proved to be Confederate generals and Ku Klux Klan luminaries and all kinds of things has been somewhat controversial over the last couple of years. And they have a statue in the state capitol in Tennessee of Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was a great hero of the Confederate side in the Civil War. And it's been decided that it's no longer appropriate to have him there. And so in the debate about who should replace him, somebody came up with the idea, who are the other great Tennesseans? Somebody said, not Elvis Presley, because obviously Elvis Presley not from Tennessee, he's from Mississippi, isn't he? They thought Dolly Parton. And so this, because Dolly Parton is the only musical figure in America that absolutely everybody likes, this got widespread support behind it. And it was about to happen. They were going to have a bill to say that they would replace Nathan Bedford Forrest with Dolly Parton. But Dolly herself has come to the fore and said, very elegant little statement this, I don't know if you read it. She said, given all that is going on in the world, I don't think putting me on a pedestal is appropriate at this time. I thought it was very beautifully put. And says, I hope, though, that somewhere down the road, several years from now, or perhaps after I'm gone, if you still feel I deserve it, that I'm certain I will stand proud in our great state capital as a grateful Tennessean. That's why Dolly Parton's career has lasted as long as it has.
Absolutely.
Elegant no way of knowing how to deal with it. Not put anybody's nose out of joint, not being offended or anything, but just withdrawing from the problem,
Well, she's got absolutely nothing to prove, has she?
Absolutely.
And it's beautiful. I mean, I can't see that happening anywhere else. Anyone else of note, anyone else would be humbly accepting it.
But. Yes, they would.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Now, I've got to ask you this because you've actually worked at Dollywood, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Spent a month there a few years ago.
I spent a month at Dollywood. Tell us about Dollywood. Where is it and what's it like?
So Dollywood is in a town called Pigeon Forge, which is next to Sevierville, which is where Dolly was born.
Pigeon Forge, brilliant.
The swinging pidge, as I like to call it, the foot of the Smoky Mountains. And it's basically, if you've been to Vegas,
No, I never have, but go on.
Right, so if you imagine Vegas is Disneyland running through a truck stop, essentially. Vegas is pretty grotty, but the strip is amazing. You've got 4 miles of just absolute opulence. Pigeon Forge is a little bit like that. It's there's nothing. There's just countryside and a few farms, and then it's got this like 4 mile stretch of road where you've got bars and a Hard Rock Cafe and museums and a replica of the Titanic and an upside down house, go kart tracks. And...
Sorry, there's a half scale replica of the Titanic.
Yep.
What, on the main street?
Yeah, it was just across from my hotel, actually. Because there was some connection with the guy who found the wreckage, and he settled in Pigeon Forge, I think, and he decided to open a museum, obviously. Yeah. So it's this kind of little enclave of bonkersness in the middle of absolutely nothing and, you know, extreme natural beauty. And then there's a huge theme park that's been plonked right next to it, which is Dollywood. And I spent a month there.
Is it big?
It's big enough. It's, you know, it's not huge, but it's but you know, good number of roller coasters and theaters and stuff. You know,
so it's got standard kind of theme park stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Okay.
And at the time, I was with the United Kingdom Ukulele Orchestra, and they have this thing called the Festival of Nations. So they have performers from every country all over the world.
Yeah,
so I was living with Argentinian gaucho dancers and German stilt walking gnomes and French handpan players and African dancers. Yeah, it was great. It was every bit as bonk as you could have imagined. I've got this tattoo. Oh, you can't see on the podcast, but I've got this tattoo done there as well by a guy called Dr. Payne, we got in. We booked our appointment. We got into Dr. Payne's little shack, and it's this big bearded man with a holstered gun. And he goes, where do you want your tattoos? And I got it with a girl called Taylor, and she wanted hers on her side, and I wanted mine on my bicep. And he goes, looks us in the eye, he goes, they call it the sweet meat, the most painful part of the body. She went first. But it was bonkers. It was, but nobody had a single bad word to say about Dolly, you know, across the board. You know, but she's very involved in Pigeon Forge and very involved in Sevierville and, you know, the sort of upkeep of the town. She's the biggest employer in the area.
Really?
She drops in on the theme park. We all met her, but she works with people there. You know, she's very, you know, she's pretty accessible. She's got this book fund that she set up. Give every child that wants one a year supply of books, mm-hmm. because she grew up not being able to afford them.
She
doesn't want any child to be without the opportunity to read. And, you know, by all accounts, she's just a genuinely wonderful, wonderful person. And, you know, I don't know of anybody of that level who of fame and who still has that sort of level of integrity. And
you had your picture taken with her, didn't you?
Did, yeah, yeah. The only person in the world who's smaller than me.
What do you remember about that? Were you whisked in? Was it like loads of people having their picture taken with the Pope or the Queen? Or
it was pretty swift because she was dealing with all the performers from that particular festival. So we had our little slot, and but you know, we had a little chat, and she was very nice. And
all right.
But she's tiny. She's absolutely tiny. Bless her. But it was really surreal. Not just, you know, being with Dolly, but being surrounded by all these bonkers performers in crazy outfits from all over the world at the same time, you know.
I keep telling you, Alex, you've got to write a book. There's a book in your many musical experiences, in the idea that you're 1 minute doing that thing and the next minute doing something totally different.
It's sell at least 3 copies.
Yeah, I'd buy one. Buy one. So we've been watching some films as well, haven't we?
We have.
We've been watching two very contrasting documentaries. One is the Britney Spears documentary, which people may have seen, Framing Britney. Is that what it's called, I think? It's a production of the New York Times. And you can see it on I think it was on Sky, but it's on Now TV. If you've got that, the entertainment package on Now TV, and it's interesting, and the contrast with the film Traveling for a Living, which is available to watch on the BFI player for free, which couldn't be more marked. We'll come to that in a second. So, Britney Spears, what did you make of it? What impression did it leave on you?
The overriding impression was poor girl. You know, I mean, she's basically been bullied and controlled her whole life. You know, that's the impression I got from it. And, you know, she kind of, you know, it's almost like she sold her soul in a sense that, you know, she had the doors opened up to her for all this opportunity and all this kind of, all this wonder and success and material wealth. But the cost of that was extreme scrutiny to a point that no human should have to endure, really, and complete swiping of her freedom. And it's just, you know, she can't get out. She can't, you know, she could never be free. I don't think she ever will be free. You know, there'll always be someone controlling her. And she just wants to, I think she just wants to sing and perform and do what she loves to do. And, you know, and it, even that seems to be a complicated business for her.
I suppose it's a very complicated business if you do it at that level, isn't it? You
know? Yeah, yeah.
The thing that struck me about it is again, my God, has it been that long? You know, I can remember when she first burst upon the scene. So when's that, 1998? Something like that.
About that,
so,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's getting on for 25 years ago. 25 years of maximum fame for a variety of different reasons. You know, first of all, for pop sensation, you know, everybody loves her. Then it's a bit controversial. Then there's the marriage. Then there's the children. Then there's the cuts off her hair, you know, public displays of, you know, instability. And then she comes back. And now she's having a documentary made about her by, note, the New York Times. This is the bloody New York Times making a film about a kind of a pop star who in any other era would have been and gone by now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the interesting thing to me, is that you contrast that with, you know, other people who were kind of sensations in earlier times. I don't know, the Osmonds or Lulu or whoever it is. They had their time and then they went away. And so they got their obscurity back, which wasn't particularly what they wanted, but they got it. Well, she has been absolutely in the limelight for all that time.
The thing with Britney is she battered down a lot of doors, didn't she? I mean, you know, there was the Spice Girls, there was Britney, and, you know, I think it was, you know, quite rightly very, very liberating for girls, you know, because there hadn't really been pop stars.
Well,
like
although you get that woman from Jive Records who appears in the documentary, say, and it's a classic case of how people say things in documentaries, that when they suit the turn of the filmmaker, nobody challenges them at all. So before her, it hadn't been women at all. And you thought, hang on, Spice Girls, Madonna, Janet Jackson, you know, she might have been different, you know, but she wasn't She wasn't the first at all. But undoubtedly, you know, she was very powerful for my eldest daughter who grew up with her. You know, happening in the world of Britney is still really important. But don't you think also, this is a terrible irony, that the things that kept her famous are all the disasters.
Yeah.
Had it not been for the disasters, none of this would be happening now, obviously. You know what I mean? But had it not been for the disasters, she probably wouldn't have been doing that mad residency in Las Vegas.
Well, if you think about it, so around the time of those disasters, you know, when she split up with Justin Timberlake and, you know, hastily got married to another guy and all that kind of stuff. I mean, for a start, the paparazzi were really kind of rabid. But also, the internet was just opening up. So all of a sudden, you had this new medium where you could basically see what these people were up to all the time, which hadn't happened before.
No, that's...
So the technology, I think, by proxy, kept her in the public eye and kind of prolonged everything along with it. But, you know, this is what a woman that's approaching 40 and she's still being controlled. You know, all aspects of her life are still being kept under lock and key. You know, it's a little bit Michael Jackson, isn't it?
Oh, I watched it. And I don't think I wasn't left an awful lot the wiser, really. It's certainly worth seeing, no doubt about it, as a reminder of what happened the day before yesterday, which is the way I think of it. It's very powerful, but it was also a reminder that I think we were talking about this recently on the podcast. Would you want to be famous nowadays? Because the people who are in the foreground of this film are the fans, are the kind of obsessive fans who are dedicating their lives to trying to bring about changes in a life that they know nothing about, really. None of us know. We don't know what's going on, really, at all.
So they're basically taking what Britney posts on social media to be cryptic coded messages about wanting to break free of the change she's currently bound by, you know, putting two and two together and making perhaps 17.
I tell you, the other thing it reminded me of in a completely unrelated field is the kind of popularity of QAnon conspiracy theories in the United States. You know, that if you wanted to see an argument for how the internet made people mad, it's a contributing part of that argument, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's people are kind of hysterical about it. Do you know what I mean? And that Britney liberated me. No, she didn't. She made some records. Yeah. you did that yourself, you know. But
It's interesting how people are completely willing to pin their entire identity and their progression as people on one person they've never met and never will.
And never will. No. Absolutely. And somebody who's never lived any kind of normal life ever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, since the age of about six. It's worth seeing. It's worth seeing. And also, as I said, a great contrast is there is a film made about the Watersons, the great folk family. And I suppose the connection to the Watersons nowadays is Norma Waterson, who was one of them, is the mother of Eliza Carthy and the wife of Martin Carthy. And up until not long ago, still made records. And it's a fantastic little BBC documentary made about them. Must have been shot in the winter of 1965. So it's black and white.
Yep.
And nothing could be a more fantastic contrast to the opulence of the Britney Spears film, you know, which is absolutely everything. Every single moment in everybody's life is recorded, you know. And this is black and white. This takes you back to the world of cobble streets, terraced houses, and people changing babies' toweling nappies while smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. Oh, cigarettes everywhere. I noticed that, you know, there's a little segment where they're recording in the studio. They're all gathered around a mic and they've all got fags on the go.
All four of them.
Astonishing.
And it's just, you know, before anybody knew that there was going to be a big folk revival and that people like the Waterstones would still be talked about 40, 50 years later, nobody knew that at the time. You know, they were just presenting this for the BBC audience that, oh, look, there's these people here who come from kind of gypsy stock, who are reviving all these old songs, which they've gone down to Cecil Sharp House in their old van to listen to, because it's the only way you could listen to it. There they are listening on single headphones, aren't they? I think
yeah, single headphones.
Well, the curator brings out rare field recordings made of some singer down in Somerset or Yorkshire or whatever. And which they use as the basis of what they do, and then they're out playing in folk clubs. I think part of it's shot at Hoddesdon Folk Club in Hertfordshire and up in Hull and so forth. And I thought musically it was fantastic. Did you like it?
I did actually, yeah. And there was that little segment where they were in rehearsal and they were talking about rehearsing and and how they didn't really go off any particular arrangement. They kind of felt their way through it. You know, they were so in tune with how things should, you know, a lot of it was quite instinctive. And I think that's what helped gel the sound together. I mean, they were completely knitted.
Absolutely. It's really worth seeing. And, you know, nothing could be a great contrast, you know, from it just shows how wide the world of music is, I suppose, that those two things are in it. But it's there on the BFI player, on the BFI site for free. You can watch it. It's called Traveling for a Living. It's made in 1966. Highly recommended.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
We are back. Any other business, Alex? Any new patrons?
We have some new patrons, indeed.
We'll welcome them aboard. I still don't have a bosun's whistle, for which I apologise. So you'll just have to imagine I'm piping you aboard. Good ship word in your ear. Here we go.
Okay, Alistair Richards.
Welcome aboard, Alistair.
Donna Rees.
Donna, can I carry your bag, madam?
Philip Guest.
Philip, your cabin is just on the next deck.
Chris Dancy.
Chris, you will be joining us at the captain's reception around about 7 o'clock. Medals will be worn.
Philip Rafferty.
Philip, welcome to the captain's table this evening. And your good lady wife.
Good lady wife. Kat Elliott.
Hello, Kat. Can't think of anything to say to you, but welcome aboard.
And annual patrons, Marion Lewis and Michael Pilch.
Oh, well, we'll see you on the foredeck for a game of quoits tomorrow morning. Well, there speaks somebody who's never been on a cruise in his life. You should have been the expert on that kind of thing. What else is happening in the world of Word? We've launched our line of merch, haven't we, Alex?
Which is rather
exciting.
It is. You've been representing, haven't you, Dave?
Representing with my hoodie. Alex thought the sight of me in a hoodie was comical because
you look good in it. I've just never seen you in a hoodie before, but you look really good in it.
So we've got hoodies with a word in your ear, a light entertainment of dark times. Artwork and hoodies and t-shirts and mugs and face masks. Anything else? Am I forgetting anything?
I think that's it on the line at the moment.
Okay, on the head. This is early days. And so if you order them there, you get them. I ordered my sweatshirt, I think on Tuesday, and it was in my home on Friday.
Don't mess about at all.
And I have to say, I'm very pleased with the quality. So there you go. And so there'll be a link to find out more about the merchandising on the website.
On wiyelondon.com.
Well, London.com. And, you know, if you haven't already looked into the benefits of being a Patreon supporter, please do that, patreon.com/wordinyourear, because that's the only way to make sure you get all of this stuff, all the stuff we're doing, all the Word in Your Attics, all the crowdcasts. We're doing a crowdcast on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
With Daryl Bullock, who's written a fascinating book called The Velvet Mafia, which is about the gay men who ran the swinging 60s. And so here we're talking about Larry Parnes, Brian Epstein, Robert Stigwood, Lionel Bart, all kinds of people. And it's a fascinating, untold part of the 60s story. So I'll be talking to him about that on Tuesday evening. And Patreon supporters will be able to join us in the room live when we do that. And then we record it. And then that goes out as a podcast and videocast, whatever, subsequently. And so all this stuff is on YouTube. Under Word in Your Ear. If you listen to the podcast and you enjoy it, please do, you know, recommend it and rate it on whatever platform you use, because that sort of stuff does genuinely make a difference to us. And we'll be back in full effect over the next week, joined by Mr. Allen, we hope, when he recovers from his indisposition, of which no doubt more later. Okay. Bye-bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.